This is the Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Hello, welcome to Auntie Anne Brain Tumors Talk Show. I'm your host, Claire, and we've got an important mission this month. It is Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and we're shedding light on a crucial issue. Brain tumors claim more lives among children and adults under 40 than any other cancer. Shockingly, only 1% of the national spend on cancer research is allocated to this silent threat. Should we go back to 2004 and what were your symptoms that led you to getting your diagnosis?
There wasn't really much. Basically, if we go back to the previous year, my brother did mention to me that he seems like, or I've been mentioning that I've been getting headaches. And I didn't think much of it at all. I was working a lot. In fact, in April, I was involved in a project sequencing the SARS genome that led to worldwide headlines. Mm. I was spending a lot of time with work, and this side thing, and part of the reason I'm spending a lot of time at work is I had the time because I broke up with my girlfriend the previous year, and that in itself was actually quite hard for me. It was a relationship that I ended, but which then subsequently really regretted. And sometimes I find that had a negative effect on my brain. But yeah, other than the headaches throughout 2003, one other thing is in February of 2004, early February, I had a work trip in Marco Island, Florida. And during that conference, in one of the breaks, I went to do a nice walk on the beach. And it's hard to describe it. One way I just describe it is it's at one point, it suddenly felt like one of my legs, my right leg, I think it was, kind of turned like jello. It was just, I didn't fall, but there was this extremely weird sensation. And at the time, I thought, okay, I'll just kind of take care of this when I get back home. But in retrospect, that could have been a partial seizure. But other than those two things, there wasn't really any other. In fact, back then I was quite an ice hockey player. Of course, I'm Canadian, so you kind of have to be an ice hockey player. Yeah. And in fact, on a Saturday night was the last game of the season for our team. In that, on that Saturday night, I actually had the best, if you count goals, I've had the most I've scored in a game. I got 5 goals on a Saturday night game, last game of the season. And basically a day and a half later, Monday morning, I collapsed into a grand mal seizure and I was out of it. I kind of came out of it. This drug-induced state a day and a half later at the hospital. It took me a while to hit me what exactly happened. Apparently, in the ambulance, they put a line in me, I guess, to get some fluids, but they punctured my right lung. Oh. And actually, when I came out of this state a day and a half later at the hospital, I had a lot of pain on my right side where the lungs were. And I think it maybe was up to 2 days where I thought that's why I was in the hospital for that reason. And wasn't at some point a neurosurgeon or neuro-oncologist came by and just matter of factly said, just said, so you have a brain tumor. And that hit me. I'm like, what? And I'm looking at my parents. What? But it turned out that was like about the 6th or 7th time I was told that. So it didn't hit me for a while under drugs and the pain in my chest.
How old were you then?
At that point, I was 29. I was young and had all the time in the world. I guess it's kind of part of my story. So I was young and had all the time in the world, and maybe that's why I broke up with who I was with, thinking I don't want to commit. I have all long life to live. And now everything changed. I thought, okay, I don't necessarily have a long life to live.
What was the plan for you treatment-wise?
So the first thing I did is a biopsy. So that was kind of done before any treatment came. A biopsy that determined what it was in my brain. Could it have been a tumor, but it could be a benign tumor. I don't know. So after doing the biopsy and analysis, basically led to the diagnosis of grade 4 astrocytoma or GBM with a little bit of oligodendroglioma.
Mm. How did you cope with that when you were 29?
I think because I had a lot of drug in me, I don't think it quite hit me. Definitely hit my mom.
Yeah.
She was beyond devastated. I kind of remained positive from day one. Apparently I was making jokes with the nurses. And so I'll back up again to 2003. I played a huge role and made headlines with sequencing the SARS genome.
Yeah.
But I was a little bit depressed and I felt stuck in my life. And after I got this cancer, I did not have a common response of why me. I had a response of, oh, okay, that makes sense now. That's why I've been depressed or whatever. It felt like it was, I felt like I needed to change something in 2003. I just was not happy. And like when this cancer came, I was like, okay, I didn't make any changes in my life. So someone made this change for me. Mm-hmm. It was almost like it was setting me on a different path, which is what I needed. And it was a bit of it sounds really corny to say, and nah, it's probably not accurate to say there was a sigh of relief, but there was definitely a sigh of a feeling of that, okay, this makes sense. There wasn't any feeling of why me, why did I get it? There was more a feeling of, okay, this makes sense. I think I knew one key is, I'll say, so I've heard many stories. Worries of brain cancer patients seeing their doctor and being told they're not going to live long or emphasizing the bad prognosis. But my friend who did the surgery, he was a bit of a genius. Basically, he didn't say that. What he did is he drew on a board, a big, like a chart showing a decrease in survival over time. But he emphasized that line going down doesn't hit the bottom. It kind of hovers over, showing that not everyone passes away early on.
Mm.
And he just said, he goes, there's no reason you can't be here. You can't be. And he went way down on the chart, like way down where it was very low. But he, like I said, it didn't hit the bottom. There were long-term survivors. And he said, there's no reason you can't be one of them.
Yeah, which that he was right. Did you go back? Do you still, is he still part of your treatment or you haven't spoken to him again?
No, unfortunately. He was a neurosurgeon. Mm-hmm. So after surgery and starting treatment, he wasn't involved in any radiation and chemotherapy or any of that. He wasn't, but we were in touch. And in fact, you can actually see him somewhere on my website. But we were in touch, but then he eventually moved to another place in the States, I think. He left left Vancouver, so yeah. He wasn't around anymore.
Do you think he gave you the hope that you needed?
Yes, what he said, that was huge, even though that was huge for me. Mm. And I think for my family, and so the irony in my case, like I said, I was working on the SARS, but that was part of the Cancer Institute. I actually started off as a cancer researcher in 2000, and 4 years later, this happened. And I know I'm diverging a bit, which is my habit, but basically I did not have experience or knowledge of brain cancer though.
Mm.
And so definitely what he said was very impactful, even just on an unconscious level that I took that in. And then I had two more things that happened very early on, and both of them were very powerful dreams. And during in my fourth week and sixth week of treatment, and basically those powerful dreams told me I was going to be fine, that I was going to live. And even before, by the time I finished treatment, I had no worry or no feeling of issues. And maybe that's why actually even getting, before getting the results of the treatment, I went on a dating site. I ended up meeting someone and we ended up getting married a year later. And yeah.
So you were living your life as you were. So it sounds like kind of that chemical of positivity in your brain has made a difference. I don't know if that has, but the fact that the person that you met originally, he gave you hope, then you've met somebody and it shows that life can still go on and good things will still happen to you. But have you ever gone through times where it wasn't easy? Like where you were having chemotherapy, radiation. What was that like for you?
Oh boy. Yeah, no, it wasn't easy. That's for sure. I could no longer take the chemotherapy even after just 2 weeks. It just really, my body couldn't handle it. And I went back and forth to the hospital. And at one point I had to have transfusions because my blood counts went in super, super low. And the radiation ended up really affecting my senses. And things had strong smell. And in fact, I joked to my mom that I had psychic smell, because one time I was over and hanging out in the living room, and then I could smell lentil. She was making lentil soup. I could smell it. Just called out and said, oh, can I have some of the soup? And she just came in the living room. Oh, I said, can I have some of the lentil soup? Because that's what I smelled. She just kind of almost came into the living room in a bit of shock. And she goes, I haven't made soup. And I'm like, oh, I can totally smell lentil soup. And she said she just grabbed the bag to make it, but she hadn't made it yet.
Had you lost any? So where you'd done this, did you lose any of your senses in any way? Because you know how sometimes you lose one thing and the others hype up a bit. So noise or things like
that. One of my senses is the hearing in my left side is quite compromised. I don't remember feeling or noticing that right away back then. My sense of taste changed a bit. And yeah, my sense of smell seemed like off the roof. Mm. It seemed to really be quite powerful. I remember I smelled like a beer brewery that's actually quite a ways away. Yeah.
So how is it that you had radiotherapy, chemo, but you didn't have to have any surgery the whole of these 20 years?
Yeah, they felt that the tumor was in a really difficult spot, that, and they knew what I did for work, and they felt if they did a surgery, negatively affect too much, that it might affect me, my ability to do what I was doing for work. Mm-hmm. But what we did is we sent the MRI slides to three other hospitals in North America, and basically all of them except one said they fully agree with our decisions here. Except one place said we typically do surgery. That's what we almost always do. But we agree with you guys. We see the reason you don't want to do it in your case. Basically, we had confirmation from a number of places to just go ahead without surgery. Mm-hmm. In terms of having brain surgery, I actually had something happen to me in 2020. I had what's called a subdural hematoma, and that's basically blood vessel burst, and there was blood between my brain and the skull. And this was actually a long-term, the damage to the blood cell was a long-term effect of the radiation that I had. And the hope was that my brain would absorb the blood, which didn't happen. So I actually did have brain surgery in 2020 to deal with that blood. But this was not a recurrence of the cancer. So that's good.
Yeah.
I think I missed another part of your question. So another thought of mine is unlike cancer in the rest of the body, where you can, the surgery is kind of an easier option because it might not affect the body so much. You can have a part here or there removed, mastectomy, whatnot. But with something in the brain, you just have to be extremely careful. They can never remove the whole tumor from the brain, because the problem with brain cancer, especially GBM, it really is immersed, especially on the edges of the tumor. It's really immersed within normal cells. If you were to do a surgery to try and get the whole thing out of there, it's a very high chance there will be negative effects on the brain, which is why typically there is surgery to get the bulk of it out, but then the chemo and radiation will deal with the remaining cells. In my case, I did have a recurrence in 2006, and I went back on the same chemotherapy, but a lower dosage and over a long period of time, and that was a success.
What was the chemo that you were having?
It's called temozolomide.
Because of how long ago it was, were you on a trial for the temozol?
No. I got lucky in that was 20 years ago, and believe it or not, it's still the standard, that particular drug. I got lucky because it was just coming out. There was a study, a protocol called the STOOP protocol, which showed that when you take the drug during radiation, there's a slightly better effect. And at the time, it was just coming out. Like, we're told you have to pay for it, which is a lot of money. But somehow it got dealt with because it just was coming out back then. So with any cancer, and again, although in this case, especially with GBM, when you're given the chemotherapy, like I said, almost always is this, the first treatment is temozolomide, but when you're given to it, it's going to kill cells that are sensitive to it. A person's going to have radiation chemo, the tumor's going to shrink. Then is often a recurrence, and what the recurrence is this: any cells remaining that were resistant to the temozolomide, now they start multiplying and grow, and now the tumor comes back. But the tumor even could look the same, very similar, be in the exact spot. It's genetically quite different, and that's why often the temozolomide would not work a second time, because those cells are resistant to temozolomide, and that's why they continue to grow into a new tumor. In my case, I potentially did not have a scenario where the tumor shrunk from treatment and then there was now new resistant cells to the temozolomide, because I actually stopped temozolomide quite early because I was so sensitive. The radiation shrunk my tumor, and then when it recurred and grown back, I think those cells, the tumor cells, were still similar to the initial tumor. So that's why the temozolomide worked the second time after my recurrence. But like I said, mentioned before, we did it 1 week per month at a lower dosage, so my body was able to take it, and it worked.
Yeah. Have you had any reoccurrences since 2006?
No.
How does that feel? Do you just get on with your life now, or do you just have it on your mind all the time?
Yeah, I actually think I don't have it on my mind enough. I've gotten so used to it that I don't really think about it. And sometimes I almost have to shake myself up and say, come on, man, you've past the odds. Like we, on days when, I don't know, I still have one side effect of the cancer is a bit of fatigue, and I might feel fatigued one day and just kind of feel a bit down. And I think so, I have to kind of remind myself that statistically I shouldn't be alive. Mm. So just enjoy every moment you have with whatever. And so it's actually more, I kind of forget, or in a way I have kind of moved forward with things. And sometimes it's hard to explain that there's full knowledge always that the brain can have side effects, double vision and hearing issues, and my balance isn't great.
Do you think that's from the drugs, or no, do you think that's from the tumor?
No, it's from the radiation. It's the radiation. That's why my hearing is compromised, because that's the bulk of where most of the radiation went. It's affected my balance and caused a double vision because it damaged the optical nerves. That's all from radiation. Mm. Yeah.
What do you do in your daily life? In that, are you keeping fit all the time? Are you a healthy person? What would you think is the difference between? Yeah,
I like to be healthier, but I'm quite careful. I do try and eat quite healthy. I do take some supplements. I don't eat junk food very rarely.
Do you avoid certain things that are considered as feeding cancer a little bit, or do you just haven't had to? You haven't done that.
I avoid some foods for other reasons, nothing to do with feeding the cancer. I do love steak. I'm thankfully, I really love salmon, and I do try and eat a lot of fish and salmons. You get your omega-3s, and thankfully I love salmon. So that's a good thing. Mm. But there's actually nothing. I avoid thinking it's not good for the cancer. I do have some things I avoid for other reasons, but I just try and eat healthy in general. Mm. And when in my head, I'm thinking more just to be healthy, not thinking about, okay, if eat healthy, the cancer won't come back. Mm. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. It's just not my way of thinking about it. I just want to be healthier. And in fact, right now, I'm going to the gym and I'm really trying to be healthy and get in better shape. But my motivation actually is more that I just want to be around for my daughter as she gets old, and I want to be healthy. And it's, in my view, the cancer is gone, long gone. But I guess I'm just trying to do certain exercises and be healthier, and hopefully that'll help things of my balance and other issues like that.
Did you have to explain things to your daughter, or did you, again, because you're not having to deal with it right now, you didn't need to really tell her anything because there's nothing to tell her?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Not interesting, it's a good question, because there is a very specific moment in 2015 when she was 7 years old. She'll be 16 in a couple months. But back in 2015, she was seven. And I was given an award for my contributions to my volunteer contribution to the brain cancer world in Canada. I was given an award. Mm. And at the presentation of the award, I guess my daughter never knew and never told her, but at the presentation of the award, I did a little speech and whatnot. Then everyone kind of, you know, got mingled around with snacks and treats and drinks and whatever. And I'll never forget the moment my daughter came to me and she goes, "So you had cancer?" And I, even now, I just get a bit emotional. Mm. I'll never forget that moment.
Did it actually make her think, wow, that's my dad that's done that?
So I think at that point back then, she may have not thought that. It was probably just hitting her that, yeah. And maybe she wasn't fully understanding what cancer was. Like I said, she would have been seven. But I think over the years, Yeah, she knows. I just found out, oh, I don't know when, maybe a few months ago, she shared my website with her friends, something like that. She's looked at it. She knows. So I do think she's recognizes what I've been through. And it's very fascinating in that sometimes I feel that my daughter's amazing. I love her a bit, as most dads probably do. Sometimes I think if I didn't get cancer, she might not be here because of the fact that it was the cancer when I got it, like I had mentioned earlier, because of that, I felt, okay, you need to move forward in life, meet someone, have kids, whatever. And I went on a dating website. And if I never got that cancer, I may not have gone on the dating website and met who I met. So it's very fascinating to me in a way, because I'm quite a thinker.
Yeah.
I have so many theories and stuff, and why this happened is meant to happen. I am writing a memoir. So that gets out all these kind of thoughts. It's taken way too long, but I'm getting there, and my writing is getting better than when I first started, so that's good. And it's going to be quite a unique memoir in terms of being from someone who's lived for now over 20 years. I collect almost every book out there I could find written by brain tumor, brain cancer survivors. Most of them are written fairly quickly after diagnosis, which I'm very impressed with. I don't know how people do it, but mine's going to be quite unique because it's been so long since diagnosis. So I mentioned the journey of a long-term survivor.
Mm. Do you ever get survival guilt?
Yeah.
How does it, like, why? I don't know if I have survival guilt. I don't know if I have survival guilt. I sometimes think, why me, when I had it?
So, yeah, I often say that when I got the cancer, I didn't experience a why me, why did I get the cancer? No, but I have more the why me, why did I get it in terms of why have I survived and so many don't? Yeah, I have asked that. I have some deep theories, which I'm struggling with how to express that in my memoir. But in general, sometimes I wonder. I did once I approached a teacher and asked him, why have I survived? And he just said, because you have a reason to be here on this. You're not done, in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
Well, there's definitely a difference between... but there's definitely a difference between the people who have had enough and they don't want to carry on. And then the person that... I think what you said when you went back to the beginning and you said how you had some really positive things to start with to get you in a positive way at the beginning.
I wouldn't be surprised if it just... subconsciously, I don't know. But I took it in without even thinking about it, that it had a bigger effect than maybe I even thought at the time.
Yeah.
Just showing this chart and showing it, he added a couple of things. He goes, you're young, you're in really good shape. And I was at that point. And he basically said, there's no reason you can't be way over here. And that little thing, yes, I think that triggered a deep death. So there's a lot of people ask me, what did you do to survive? How come? I think having a positive, not just more than just having hope, I think having a very strong feeling inside that you will survive can actually have a positive effect on the brain. I do think I am a believer as a scientist and quite a spiritual person that we can affect our brain cells with thoughts. But then if it's even deeper, like unconscious thoughts, it can have a profound effect, I believe. I feel like I was part of my reason to be here, to reason I'm living, is to help others and help others deal with what I've already kind of been there, done that. That I've dealt with it myself, and I'm obligated to help others now.
Is there anyone that whilst the whole, you know, the last 20 years that you want to, is there anyone you want to say thank you to that's gone through this journey with you?
I will mention one thing. My wife and I got divorced. Uh-huh. I'm a single dude now. So if you know any women in the UK that want to meet a guy, I'm single.
Okay, there you go, everybody. Anyway. A bachelor ready. Yeah,
exactly. I can get emotional.
I always
my
think,
mom.
Yeah. Oh, our moms.
She's
just been there for you the whole way through, hasn't she? So from the beginning. I always think, because we never...
When I came out of... When I came out of a drug-induced state at the hospital, the first thing I remember is wet cloth on my mouth because it got all dry. That was her. Oh. And... She had, when I was younger, quite a bit younger, she had two types of cancer, breast cancer and then cancer of the ovaries, and she survived. She passed away 2 years ago as complications from diabetes, but she was my inspiration.
That's amazing. That must be just something in your genes that's just, it can cope with things like that, that others can't.
Yeah, when you talk about genes, it's interesting because it was part of a study. There's a small group of brain cancer folks who they can get a certain mutation from their mom who's had breast cancer. So I had my DNA tested to see if I have this mutation. And I was really hoping I did not, because then if I did, I wouldn't tell my mom. But she found out, she'd almost probably feel guilty. Thankfully, I did not have that mutation. So the reason I got brain cancer had nothing to do genetically from that I got from my mom, thankfully. But even during over the years, that was for me part of it, that I had to survive. For my mom's sake, if I passed away, she couldn't live.
So you just had so many things to live for. Yeah. Is there anything you would advise to other people that have recently got diagnosed with cancer?
Yeah, the biggest thing is to just envision yourself healthy, envision that the cancer is gone. Like deep down, go to bed, tell yourself the cancer is gone. Envision that it's gone. Don't just think, I hope it goes or hope this treatment works. Actually know within yourself the treatment did it, your mind did it, dealt with it, that cancer is gone. And just deep down, make that part of your soul. And I do think that will have a positive effect in your brain, and in terms of the neuroplasticity, actually create new cells that are not cancerous. The other thing is, I have all this stuff on my website, but early on, maybe within a year or 2 years after I got the cancer, I taught myself how to do the Rubik's Cube. And not more just, I was just very curious. I remember back then thinking, can I even create new memories? Is this how I'm going to be the rest of my life? And so I taught myself how to do the Rubik's Cube. And then as each month that came, without thinking about it at all in between, I did it again just to see. And I might have to relearn something, but over time, I realized I do it 1 month, the next month goes by, and I can do it again. And that taught me, okay, obviously, I can create new brain cells. Even in this state of having brain cancer. And that was a bit of an eye-opener for me. The lesson I get out of that is, one thing, I'll say two more things, is to try new things, because that'll have very positive effects. To try new things, read a new type of book, read learn a certain dance, just try new things, which is just really good for the brain, and I think not good for the cancer. And I forgot what my second thing I was going to say. There you go. But yeah, just trying new things is really good. Oh, and the second thing is find a reason or purpose that you need to be here. You get the cancer, life's over, or life has done a complete 180 and everything's different. What's the point? It can be easy to give up or think, what am I going to do now? But if you create in yourself, because it's a reason you have to live for your kids, for your wife, for your husband, take that and make it deep down in your soul that you have to be here. And I think that helps too.
Yeah. Thank you very much for just sharing your story. And you are really inspiring. I really appreciate it.
For sure. Nice to chat. Very
and
much.
You. Yeah. Thank you very Great. Much. This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast.